The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Hose me down. Welcome to Dave's Gone By. 90 minutes of talk radio, music, comedy, and animal tracks brought to you by Total Theater and Performing Arts Insider Magazine. And we've got a fun one tonight. You know how I'm always saying this show is a mix of comedy, talk radio, music, and interviews? Well, it generally is, but rarely is it so evenly apportioned as it will be tonight, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com. You want comedy? Stick around for the news gone by, a look at world and local events from a jaundiced but jaunty skew, everything from politics to crime, from eccentrics to anomalies. This week, we'll have news stories about Uncle Sam, Dear Abby, a corpse groom, and a corpulent guru. Plus, much more. That kind of fills the comedy section of the programmatical pie chart. Talk radio? Well, we'll have our recurring segment of Dave Goes Off. It's basically the place where I get to yak about some issue or event or complaint that intrigues or annoys me. This week, a little more whimsical than usual, more observational than polemical. I'll be blabbing about handkerchiefs, human sacrifice, and Jewish plumbers. Now, that one might fall into comedy also, but for now, let's label it talk radio. Another piece of the delicious pie I like to call Dave's Gone By. Interview? Very happy to have on the program one of the leading lights and most crucial people in the world of New York City cabaret. Her name is Jamie DeRoy, and if you've had any familiarity with cabaret and nightclub of the past 20 to 30 years, you've either seen her perform, or host an awards show or benefit, or produce an evening featuring an array of brilliant singers and comedians. Jamie has had a biweekly cable television show on Manhattan for several years now. I think it's won a couple of awards and has become a real treasure trove of recent cabaret history. And if that weren't enough, Jamie's also been putting out CDs the past few years, not of herself, but of the performers she's come into contact with and often helped bring to public attention. She calls the series Jamie DeRoy and Friends, and the discs usually have proceeds going to charity. Well, this one is no different. It's called Animal Tracks, with proceeds going to the Humane Society. Now, the CD basically takes more than a dozen cabaret singers, many of them well-known, a few pretty new to the turf, and each of them sings a song about an animal. Cute songs, quirky songs, inspiring songs about everything from dogs to cats to birds to snakes. In fact, I got an email from a press agent friend of mine that his cat, Benny, is the brother of the adorable little pussycat on the CD's cover. Now, that cat belongs to Jamie. You can see it on her website, jamiederoy.com, or just go to my website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, and click on Jamie's name for the link. Now, says my press agent pal, the cat on the cover is Tigger, and Tigger is the brother of my cat, Benny. Not just brothers, litter mates. And they're Bengals, really a handful, and also so wonderful, unquote. That's very sweet. Thank you, Jim, for the letter. Or as I wrote back to him, the things men will do for a sweet little pussy. But I digress. I trigress. I quadrigress. I do whatever I want on this program because that's sort of the point. But as I've proved, I try to make sure that Dave's Gone By is a mix of smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music. It's my responsibility because I'm Dave. Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, humorist, journalist, and theater critic, and I've been doing this little business called show since October 2002. Proud to be doing it still on this radio station, taking risks, sometimes flopping, sometimes flying. It's what it's all about. What keeps it interesting for me, and hopefully for you as well. So I'm not going to take up much more time before starting the show. We've got a lot to do. Just two reminders. Number one, we're still taking offers for new and wonderful opening catchphrases for the program. For the first 60 weeks, I was using, "Good evening, everybody! Welcome to Days Gone By," which was perfectly acceptable, totally usable, but a bit familiar, certainly not unique. And if there's one thing I want this show to be, it's unique. So I've mulled over a few other ideas for salutations, including "Dave's here," or "Dave's not here," you know, the Cheech and Chong thing. And then there's "These are the Daves, my friend," but nothing really standing out. So far, I've settled on "Hose me down," because it's just so odd and energetic, a real ear-opener. And I may stay with it, but I can be convinced otherwise. So keep, please, sending your ideas, your suggestions, too. Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. I'm giving it two or three more weeks, so you have time. Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email davesgoneby@aol.com. The winner will get a cassette or compact disc of this program, the very episode where I mention your name and victorious phrase. So please, remember to do that. And remember that if you have kids or people who might be sensitive to the occasional five-letter word or boggy jape, do yank them away from the radio speaker and have them go frolic in traffic or something. And speaking of frolicking, here's a song from the CD we were just talking about, Jamie DeRoy and Friends, Volume 5, Animal Tracks. This is one of my favorite cabaret singers out there, Steve Ross. It's like he was just born to sing Noel Coward and Cole Porter, and in this song, it sounds like Steve is doing just that. Only it's a recent song by Lee Pockris and lyricist Ann Croswell, kind of a kin to the two other Animal songs that were written by Cole Porter, Let's Misbehave and Let's Do It, Let's Fall in Love. So, with the sickly scent of Valentine's Day Russell Stover's still melting in the air, here's a little ditty about aquatic love, an animal track from Animal Tracks on Days Gone By, The Dolphin Song.
Some people mate to reduce anxiety. Some people mate to inflate their id. Starlets will mate for the notoriety. Harlots will mate for 11 quid. Byron would mate just to shock society. Henry VIII just to mock the church. Catherine the Great had a great variety. Kinsey could mate for research, but not the dolphin. No, not the dolphin. Look at the dolphin. Dolphins do it for fun. Oh yes, the dolphins do it for the sheer euphoria. Dolphins do it for the mere delight. Like Prince Albert and the young Victoria, they have at it day and night. Oh yes, the dolphins do it for the simple joie de vivre. When they mate, they're in a state of bliss. Oh, so happy just to give and to receive. Why can't people be like this? Some people mate for a rise in salaries. Some for a tip on the Ascot Stakes. Stout people mate just to burn up calories. Poor people mate when the telly breaks. Some people mate when the vicar tells them to witness the downfall of Hester Prynne. Some say they must, for a force compels them to witness the late Errol Flynn. But not the dolphin. No, not the dolphin. Look at the dolphin. Dolphins do it for fun. Oh yes, the dolphins do it for the sheer euphoria. Dolphins do it for the mere delight. Like Prince Albert and the young Victoria, they have at it day and night. Oh yes, the dolphins do it for the simple joie de vivre. When they mate, they're in a state of bliss. Oh, so happy just to give than to receive. Why can't people be like this? Dolphins try to do it with the dinghy, with a buoy or a rubber raft. I am told they fornicate with frisbees, which is absolutely daft. They will try it with a live torpedo or a Fiji Island war canoe. And if you go swimming with a dolphin, he may try to mate with you. He can't help it. You look so fetching. He feels so friendly. Doesn't know it isn't done. Dolphins do it just for fun.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com on this February 16th, 2004. Time for the News Gone By, a look at world and local events of the past week from a derisive perspective. Well, now that the Grammys and Oscars are done with, it seems the whole Janet Jackson Super Bowl thing is hopefully starting to die down. But if you think Michael's sister flashing her boobie is a big deal, dig what's going on at Carnival in Rio. Brazil has been a little pissed at the United States about the whole xenophobic fingerprinting at the airport thing, so they're taking it out on Uncle Sam, literally. At the Carnival parade, a 12-foot styrofoam float will depict Uncle Sam with his pants down and his penis exposed. Asked what that was supposed to represent, Carnival officials explained that Uncle Sam is just the back half of the float. The front part is a naked American taxpayer bending over. Some sobering newspaper news. Pauline Phillips, the writer once known to the world as Dear Abby, has been suffering from Alzheimer's disease for several years. In fact, Phillips handed down the writing of her famous column to her daughter, Jean, back in 2002. Now, Mama still does write the occasional column, however. In fact, there was one just last week. I got this out of Newsday. Here. Dear Abby, my teenage daughter is dating a boy I do not approve of. Should I let her know what I think, or wait until it gets more serious? Signed, Worried in Cleveland. Abby writes, Dear Worried, your daughter is still young, and therefore making choices that are alien and upsetting to you. If there's still time before it's too late, wait. See? Abby still got it. Very good advice. Very succinct. Let me read the next letter in the same column. Dear Abby, my teenage daughter is dating a boy I do not approve of. Should I let her know what I think, or wait until it gets more serious? Signed, Worried in Cleveland. Abby writes back, Dear Worried, your daughter is now learning to be her own person and may do or say things that make you fear for her welfare. But until it's too late, I say wait. Well, all right, that's kind of... Here's letter number three in the column to Dear Abby. The person writes, Dear Abby, my teenage daughter is dating a boy I do not approve of. Should I let her know what I think, or wait until it gets more serious? Signed, Worried in Cleveland. Dear Worried, I'm so glad you asked this question, since I get it so rarely. I think you should be patient with your daughter, but I do have one question. What's a Cleveland? In entertainment news, sad news from Broadway, The Lion sleeps tonight and for all eternity. Jason Reyes, who originated the role of adult Simba in The Lion King, killed himself last week. Details are sketchy, with little information about how or why this 28-year-old performer committed suicide. Maybe Reyes took the song lyrics a little too seriously, as when they sang Hakuna Matata, which means no more worries for the rest of your days. Or maybe the Broadway angels upstairs were feeling a little overworked and demanded a raise. Some news from the real animal kingdom. Two Siamese twin turtles, joined at the shell, were surgically separated last week. The owner had named them Peanut Butter and Jelly, and says she assumes that even though they're now unstuck, they'll still stay together because, quote, how can you have peanut butter without jelly, unquote. It's a cute sentiment, although most likely dead wrong. After spending years with the other turtle's drool falling on his head and his crap running down his tail, my guess is peanut butter will first kill jelly and then move to Tierra del Fuego. Now here's a sick little story from Africa. Four Nigerian men plucked the eyes out of a 13-year-old boy to use in their witchcraft ceremonies. They apparently wanted to use the organs to fashion a charm that renders the wearer invisible. Be assured, the men will receive severe punishment fitting to the crime of stealing eyes. Yes, they'll get 40 lashes. Yes! Yes, indeed! Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. That ringing you hear is the beloved comedy bell, signaling that Dave's gone by. Bad pun of the week. Every week, we make a play on words so short-sighted, so blindingly unwatchable, that you'll wish we put a lid on it. But no, instead we gaze directly into the deep, dark dopiness, unblinkingly, and take our punishment. Because the Dave's gone by, Bad Pun of the Week is your place to advertise an event, product, or service. If people are laughing, if they're getting a chuckle out of something stupid I say, that means two things. A, they're in a good mood, and B, they're listening closely. And isn't that what you want from every client? From each customer who visits your store or calls your showroom, you want people who will sit through a good, personalized commercial and not tune out if it's cleverly done and truthful and heartfelt. And once they do hear the ad, well, if they need or want what you have to offer, they're going to be in a great frame of mind to take you up on it. So if you want to advertise on this show, does it have to be the Bad Pun of the Week? Absolutely not. You can just do a regular commercial, like the Tandoor Grill or Performing Arts Insider, or you can sponsor a whole segment, like Dave's Got Guests or the World Weird Web. You can even sponsor the whole program for a lot less money than you probably think. Now, I've been talking for the past 3 weeks about changing the greeting for the show, from, "Good evening, everybody," to, "Hose me down, welcome to Dave's Gone By," or something like that. Well, it's only a hop, skip, and a jump to saying, actually, it's not even a jump. It's just a hop and a skip. Forget the jump. From "Welcome to Dave's Gone By" to "Welcome to Dave's Gone By, brought to you by Samantha's Pet Shop," or "Sunbright Cleaning Service welcomes you to Dave's Gone By." You get the idea, because advertising on Dave's Gone By is effective, affordable, and fun. And if you don't believe me, give us a chance to prove it to you with more information. All you have to do is call us, 516-295-1511, area code 516-295-1511, or email davesgoneby@aol.com, davesgoneby@aol.com, and ask for prices and particulars to be a sponsor or advertiser on Dave's Gone By. Spring is just around the corner, so get those people walking through your door, ringing your phone off the hook by reaching them through Dave's Gone By. 516-295-1511 or davesgoneby@aol.com. This time next week, I could be saying that Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week is brought to you by you, so don't be good. Be ponderful. Returning to the news gone by, on the legal front, well, how often have we heard the idea that a person's taxes should be tied directly to their wealth? Not a flat percentage, which tends to penalize low-income people, but a scale where rich people pay a lot more. Now, it seems to make sense with income tax, but like anything else, the idea can get carried away. For example, last week in Finland, police pulled over Jussi Salonoja for speeding. Now, since Salonoja is a multimillionaire, his traffic fine was $216,900. Apparently, the amount is tied to information the courts get from the Inland Revenue Office. And it's not an isolated fluke. 2 years ago, the executive director of Nokia Phones got a traffic citation of $148,000 for going 15 miles over the speed limit. He fought the fee in court and got it whittled down to $7,500, not because the initial fee was outlandish, but because he proved his income wasn't so high anymore. Well, the Finns have been arguing and bitching about this policy for months now, but no one's actually changed anything, probably because, in the grand scheme of things, for the average person, Fighting for the right of a billionaire to hang on to an extra quarter mil ranks up there with debating whether jockeys should be allowed to doctor their mallets in non-competitive polo exhibitions. Still, there may be practical uses for this rich pay more idea in America. Think about it. If the police were really to ticket every Long Island yutz who drives while talking on a cell phone, we would not only pay off George Bush's deficit, we'd say Social Security, put a man on Mars, and free national health care to every man, woman, and child in America. But no dental. We don't want to be punitive. Actually, I was mistaken. We can do all that if they enforced current fine systems. Well, unfortunately, we're already 2 days past Valentine's Day, but it's never too late for a sweet romantic story, like this one, of a 35-year-old French woman who married her boyfriend in early February. The ceremony was performed at City Hall between Christelle de Michel and her true love, Eric, who was not at the ceremony. Eric had been killed in 2002 by a drunk driver, but under French law, Christelle was still allowed to marry him, becoming both his wife and his widow at the same time. I assume it has to do with bank accounts and real estate and all that. Still, I think going through a whole ceremony is a bit macabre, especially when the civil judge made her promise to love, honor, and shovel until death do them both. Speaking of dead husbands, Veronica Atkins, widow of diet guru Dr. Robert Atkins, is incensed over reports that her hubby weighed 258 pounds at the time of his death. Not exactly fighting trim for a man whose pound reduction plan is more popular than ever. Atkins died last year when he, allegedly, slipped and fell on a sidewalk. Yeah, he was 72 and had a bad heart, though his family says that had nothing to do with his eating habits. And it should be noted that the so-called Dr. Fatkins was apparently a reasonable 195 pounds when he entered the hospital, but because of intravenous feeding and his organs shutting down, he gained 63 pounds while in a coma. A hospital spokesperson noted that it is not uncommon for comatose patients to awaken or die fatter than they were when they came in. She did say the hospital will discontinue using saline solution made by Krispy Kreme. In collectible hobby news, well, everyone thought it would last forever, but times change. People grow apart, and even the happiest couples can go their separate ways. No, I'm not talking about Ben and J-Lo, or Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman, or Michael Jackson and Rubba Rubba. No, last week the bye-bye bug bit a couple who'd been together for 43 years. Never married, just dating, but they always seem perfectly compatible. I guess you can never tell with these things, which is why Mattel Toy Company has reported the shocking news that Barbie and Ken have called it Splitsville. I know. Take a moment. No, but I gotta give credit to the marketing vice president at Mattel for keeping her tongue firmly in cheek. So firmly, I'm amazed she didn't pierce her jaw. Now, the VP said, quote, "After 43 years of dating, Barbie and Ken have drifted apart," and she added that, quote, "there are a lot of successful career women out there who don't want to get tied down," unquote. And yes, she did hint that Barbie just might start a fling with Blaine, an Australian beach boy. Now, I'd be cautious about that because, you know, he's just going to leave her with an STD, and then she's going to need all these ointments and treatments and stuff. And then she'll embark on a lesbian relationship with one of the Powerpuff Girls, but that will end badly when she had a weekend frolic with South Park's Mr. Hankey, and is reminded just how much she misses that shape. But Mr. Hankey goes back to his drunken wife, and Barbie embarks on a series of meaningless affairs with Japanese Yu-Gi-Oh! Monsters. This leaves her rather bitter and miserable as an old woman, with Hello Kitties all over her apartment and increasingly dangerous Tonka toys in her goodie drawer. Barbie spends her last years alone, clinically depressed, her hair straw-like and ragged, her figure gone to hell, her tiny boobs sagging below her arthritic and barely movable arms. And then, on her deathbed, who should show up but Ken, walking with a cane and HIV positive from his years with G.I. Joe, but still with those piercing blue eyes and killer smile. Ken takes Barbie's hand and says, "Hun, it's been so many years, and we've had so many great times together." "Yes, Ken," sobs Barbie. Ken gets down on one bendable knee. He gazes into Barbie's good eye and says, "Barbie, you're gonna think I'm an old fool, but there's a question I've been meaning to ask you." "Oh, Kenny, Kenny," says Barbie. "Yes, Ken," says, "I know it's been so many years, and you can say no. I'll understand." Barbie raises herself slightly off the pillow and turns down her oxygen tank. "Oh, Ken, just ask." "All right," says Ken, clearing his throat. "Barbie, can I have my records back? You really should have returned them when you dumped me. I mean, some of those things go back into the 1950s, and I can get good money on eBay for them. I would have taken them in 04, but you and that scumbag Blaine were already living in Tasmania. Barbie? Barbie, you okay? Barbie?" Well, I'm not sure Mattel had quite that scenario in mind, but you can't say that little tramp didn't have it coming. Hey, remember a couple of months ago on the News Gone By, there was a story about a teacher who went a little nutso, and to discipline a retarded kid who farted, she sprayed air freshener on his butt. She was charged with endangering a child's welfare, but as it turns out, could have been a lot worse. The Daily News reported last week on a mentally disabled 11-year-old Brooklyn girl who died after spritzing air freshener into her own mouth. The girl's adoptive mom found the kid unconscious, but it was too late. She died at the hospital. Asked if she was poisoned by the fresh aerosol scent, a doctor said no, she just pined away. And that's the News Gone By for February 16th, 2004. Please send your comments, opinions, and wedding shrouds to Dave's Gone By, Box 62, Unite, New York, 11557-0062. We reserve the right to read your letters on the air, name withheld upon request. Although, if we withhold your name, what are other people supposed to call you? "Hey, Marvin, how you doing?" "Nope, sorry, not Marvin today. My name's being withheld at the moment." "What are you talking about?" "Dave is withholding my name at my request. I got tired of using it, so it might be a few weeks before I go back to it." "But all your credit cards and bills are in your name." "Exactly. Thanks, Dave." No, but seriously, do write in. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Send cards, send letters, send presents, but please, no Krispy Kreme IVs. Can't you see the donut disturb sign? Back after this. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com, and a segment we like to call Dave's Got Guests, actually a special guest, who is the doyen, the diva, I hesitate to say mistress, but more like hostess of cabaret in New York City for quite a few years now. She has been kind of the person to turn to coordinate all these events and benefits, and she has a cable show all to do with cabaret singers and cabaret stars. And her name, if you haven't guessed by now, is Jamie DeRoy. And she is on the telephone with us right now. Jamie, thank you for joining us on Dave's Gone By.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, Jamie, first of all, you've got two different things in the hopper. You've got something happening on February 24th, and you also have a CD. Why don't we start with the disc first? It's called Animal Tracks, Volume 5. So I guess there were four of these before now. What's it all about, Jamie?
Well, I've been doing this series of CDs, and they all have themes, and the first two were on taking you back to your childhood, and then we did a Christmas holiday kind of an album, and then the last one was on family relationships, and then I just decided, because I love the Humane Society so much, that we would do a special CD for them, all animal songs, with the proceeds going to them, and they are just the most delightful people to work with, and I mean, going up to the Humane Society, even in their offices, they have a lot of the dogs and cats running around and just sort of working with them in the office. It's a great place to work, I'll tell you.
Because, and is it all, I mean, cats and dogs, or do they have all sorts of weird, bizarre,
I don't think they have a lot of weird animals there. They have a little hospital there, too, where people can bring their pets for checkups and to get spayed, and I think that they are, you know, probably a low-cost group because they encourage spaying of animals, and, you know, I don't know what the costs and you know, the structure of all of that is, but whenever I go there, in the waiting room, there's always people waiting to get into the doctor's offices. And then just to see these adorable pets that, for one reason or another, have been dropped off and are looking for new homes. Sometimes it's as simple as somebody's gotten a pedigree dog, which is what happened just recently, where I think somebody was given a dog for Christmas, and it was a woman who just, she couldn't take care of it. It was a very spry, adorable little poodle, and she just couldn't handle it. So now the dog is up for adoption. But there's a million and one stories of why a cat or a dog would end up there.
One of the things is kind of interesting, the intro, the foreword in the booklet to the CD that you do recounts, it seems like you've had like 400 animals in your lifetime so far.
Well, I had a lot, and I mean, I tell you, at one point I had, in my first marriage, 8 cats, and at one point between 2 of the cats, one cat gave birth to 7 kittens and 1 to 1, so at one point in this home we had, it was a big apartment, thank goodness, 8 cats and 8 kittens, but I was in heaven, I mean.
I thought it was like the single, you know, single ladies who were supposed to have a bazillion cats, not the married ones.
No, but I know, isn't that bizarre?
So we'll talk about the CD in a little bit, but let's now get back more to your origins and how you became kind of so associated with cabaret in Manhattan. Where did that all start for you?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's I had really started in the nightclub business before they even referred to it as cabaret, way, way, way back in the days of the living room, when around us were the Empire Room and the Persian Room and upstairs at the downstairs, and downstairs at the upstairs, and, you know, just, I think, you know, we were kind of in the heyday then, or maybe it was just the end of that era. And when I kind of got back into singing in nightclubs, it's when Reno Sweeney was really in full throttle, and so I was doing clubs in those days, like Reno Sweeney and the original ballroom in Soho, and I don't know if you remember the Bushes in the Park Royal Hotel on West 73rd.
I remember Reno Sweeney's reading about it. I wasn't quite going to cabaret at the point when I would have gotten there.
Yeah, that was where, you know, Melissa Manchester and Peter Allen, I mean, that's where most of us really became familiar with them.
But you were a performer.
I was a performer, mostly a singer, really, and it wasn't until I started working at places like Reno Sweeney and the ballroom where I was suddenly not an opening act for a comic, because they always had a girl singer open for a male comic. And, you know, if there weren't as many female comics in those days. But it would always be a singer opening for a comic, and there was always at least 2 people on a bill. And at Reno Sweeney, they didn't always have an opening act, so sometimes you were the only act. And I just found my footing in those clubs in the sense of that I just was very comfortable talking to the audience, which is something I was never allowed to do when I was opening for a comic, because you weren't supposed to talk to the audience, and you certainly weren't supposed to be funny in front of a comic in those days.
Right.
Now they're not as paranoid about it, but boy, they were then. And it just turned out I was quick on my feet and funny, and some agents from William Morris, Lee Stevens, who was the head of William Morris, and Lee Solomon, who was the head of the Variety Department, encouraged me to go more the comedic route. I never had the guts to do it full stand-up comedy. I think that's about the hardest thing you can do, truly.
So you were more, so I see it evolved more into kind of a hostess.
Well, it started with just involving into doing funny songs and special material and just being comfortable with an audience and talking to an audience. And then I used to throw annual 30th birthday parties, and I would always ask a few friends to come by and do my favorite thing that they did in their act, and I would, you know, usually do a song or two. I remember doing one at a place called Private Eyes on, I think it was West 22nd Street or something, very cool place that Dallas Bozendahl, who was just a great party giver, had arranged for me, and I remembered saying, it's my party and I'll sing if I want to. And that was the invite. And we had several guests perform. And so in 1990, I just kind of decided that it would be more fun and something different instead of just doing it once a year at a party, to do it as a series and to bring my talented friends on and let them do what they do. I mean, you know, a lot of people go to see other people's acts and they go, oh, I really like that song. I think I'll sing it. I wasn't interested in learning it, and I figured I wouldn't do it as well as they did anyway, and why should I steal their material? I want to share their material. So I started, you know, it was kind of like a feeling of sharing my friends with my performer friends and kind of doing a crisscrossing of, you know, and it actually helped the performers in many cases because it broadened their audiences. But of course, you know, a lot of the performers helped me too because a lot of the performers were, you know, pretty big names, so they would help bring them in the audience, they would help get us more attention, and, you know, it was always kind of a mix of a known performer with an unknown performer, which was kind of the exciting part of it. You know, it's like in the old days of Ed Sullivan, you'd get a star, but you'd get some variety act that no one ever heard of, but it was great fun.
And it also wasn't just like an unknown opening for 10 minutes for a known. They follow each other and kind of, there was sort of a star system, but it wasn't so calculated like that, because you would follow a star with someone that you never heard of, and then another star.
Right.
It was just whoever happened to be on next into a nice flow of an evening. And it's a rather egalitarian way to do things.
Right.
And then would you count, since over, really got into that part of it, things about back in 1990. Can you point to certain performers that you semi-discovered that you kind of really pushed forward and said to everybody, hey, you know, check these folks out?
Well, I mean, Caroline Ray was certainly unknown when I used to have her on the show, and a lot of times I'd book her and she'd get some great job. I seemed to be a lucky, almost like a lucky coin for a lot of the performers that I'd book, and then they'd get a job, and they were always, you know, we always had an understanding if you get a paying gig that, you know, you just call and we'll replace you, don't worry about it. But it always brought them luck. And people like Caroline Ray, and I mean, Mario Cantone was always incredible, but when he was with me at Caroline's, when we did the show at Caroline's on Broadway, when they had moved uptown, Ron Delsener had come to check out the show, and he grabbed Mario and had him open for Shirley Bassey at Carnegie Hall, and that started him on a whole new, you know, role. And then he started playing Caroline's, which he had never done until, you know, my group show. So Peter Cincotti was with me when he was 15, 16, 17.
Oh, he's getting big now, yeah.
And it's always fun to find somebody that nobody else has found quite yet, or, you know, it's just from a different venue. I mean, in California, I had Bruce Valanche on, who was hysterical. And people have seen his words, have heard his words, because he's written for Bette Midler for the Academy Awards. He would, you know, write jokes backstage for Billy Crystal. But not everybody knew who he was. And to have him tell the stories of working with Bette Midler or working backstage at the Academy Awards or working with the Osmonds, it was just priceless. I mean, he is so funny. Now he's running around the country doing Hairspray in the Harvey Fierstein part.
Exactly. And I guess he took the idea also from when he was shaping his material in, you know, your cabaret/variety shows. He even did an off-Broadway solo show.
Right. This was actually, when I had him on, it was before he did that. And he had just one day decided to get up and do a little stand-up at Caroline's, and I just thought he was hysterical. I mean, I knew him from we would have lunch every once in a while, and I just was always wanting to work with him, and it just never really panned out, but he just was funny. And you could call his answering machine, and he would change it every day with a really, really funny message. So when he came on my show in California, I really thought he wanted to just do some, you know, stand-up, like 8-10 minutes like everybody else does. And he said, nah, I just want to sit and talk. Well, we sat on the stage, and because I knew a lot about his stories and his life, I knew a lot of questions to ask to guide him into some of the funniest stories you've ever heard. And, you know, we spoke for like 26 minutes solid. I never spend that much time with one guest. But it was just too funny to stop it, and he was the last guest, and, you know, you could tell by feeling it and looking out in the audience that they were with us, that we weren't losing them. If we were losing them, I would have cut it. But we weren't losing them, so we just kept going with it, and it was just the most fun. And, of course, then I cut it into a wonderful, you know, television show, just him.
Wow. Now, speaking of, why don't you let our audience know where they can catch your show?
Well, first of all, it's on every other Tuesday on public television in Manhattan. It's on Manhattan Cable and RCN at 67 and 110. And it's a few places outside of the city carry it. But the live shows, we're doing the last Tuesday of every month at Dillon's on West 54th Street. So my next one, I compete with myself. I'm on television the same night I'm on stage, but I'm Tuesday, February 24th at Dillon's, and some of my guests are Ann Steele, who's a wonderful singer, and Angela LaGreca, who incredibly funny. She does some very funny songs too, but she's just sitting talking or standing up talking. She's unbelievable, and Ray Jessel, who kind of stole the cabaret convention when he did his funny thing about Einstein, which he will do for us, and a new comic, Joe Bronzy. So, you know, we keep adding guests to the list, and Modern Man, who I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they are three of the funniest singer-songwriters that join together, and they are hysterical. It's David Buskin, Wurzbach, and Rob Carlson. Really, really funny group.
That's actually, Wurzbach is on the CD for Animal Tracks.
He does the snake song.
Wanted to ask you, though, I mean, I'm more of a theater person than a cabaret person, but even in my limited knowledge of that field, in the decade and a half or so that I've been out there reviewing shows and seeing things, I mean, I've seen Rainbow and Stars close, I've seen 88 go away, I've seen a Firebird. Is cabaret in, like, a difficult time now, or is it in a... Am I missing, like, a lot of clubs that I should be knowing about, or where do you think the state of the art form is right now?
Well, you know, everything always goes through changes. I mean, when the living room closed, everybody thought, oh, my God, it's the end of an era, and upstairs at the downstairs closed. They had reviews downstairs, reviews actually upstairs and cabaret performers down. It's always sad. Always sad when a club closes, but things go through an ever-evolving process. And it's true that we don't have the Persian rooms and the Empire rooms anymore or anything really quite like it, although I guess the closest thing to those rooms would be Feinstein's at the Regency and the Algonquin and places like that. So, I mean, I always hate to see a club close, but it's just a matter of attrition is just going to happen, and I think things just change. I mean, when Reno Sweeney's, you know, came out of after an era when all these other kind of clubs closed, and when they were around, we thought, wow, this is it, you know. And then when Reno Sweeney's went off the radar, that was quite sad too. But then you start seeing places like Don't Tell Mama popping up and down the line 88s, and it happens just because, you know, a landlord wants to raise the price of the space, and it's unaffordable to a club owner. So there usually a little bit of time happens, and then a new club appears. I mean, even like the King Kong Room closing recently.
Right.
They've moved so many of the venues that were going to be at the King Kong Room over to the Ars Nova Theater. Now, that is a space that existed already, but was really only existing on a rental basis here and there with a couple of off-Broadway or shows or an occasional cabaret thing. And now you hear about it all the time because it's really, like, there's something there every night now.
Hmm. Well, that also leads to sort of a side question, and I assume you're in contact with the owners and producers at these clubs. Can a club make it? It's like, how does Don't Tell Mama do it and pay its employees and pay the rent and not take the money and run for its real estate?
Well, most of the places don't own the spaces anyway. They rent. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, selling out in the sense of, you know, somebody owned a building and somebody came by and said, you know, we'll give you $10 million for the building. I mean, they probably would go, you know, I'm never going to make that kind of money if I stay here for the rest of my life. I'm taking it.
Right. Yeah.
But in most cases, they're renting the spaces.
That's why I think it's wonderful that Don't Tell Mama is still there, but it makes me wonder. It's right, you know, in the heart of 46th Street and rather large space. And I have a good crowd, but I wonder how much are they paying in rent and how do they swing it? I mean, selling drinks or cover charge or what?
They don't make it on the cover charges for sure, because the cover charges for the most part, you know, go to the performer, and certainly the performers never make money in cabaret. Unfortunately, the performer these days, you know, bears a lot of the brunt of the expenses, certainly the production expenses. I'm not belittling the club because, believe me, they have rent and they have insurance and they have a staff to pay. So there's, you know, they've got their problems just like the performers have their problems. But, you know, how does a club ever make it? I don't know. I mean, you know, there are always different situations. Certainly Feinstein's or an Algonquin are really different situations. They're a whole different kettle of fish than, you know, than the smaller clubs. And I'm sure a lot of these rooms are hand-to-mouth. I mean, Don't Tell Mama's now not allowed to have two shows going on at the same time, which it always used to.
Ooh.
So they've had to reconfigure their space somewhat. And the piano bar earlier is a showroom, and then it becomes a piano bar after the, you know, the show that's happened there. So they have a lot of spaces, but they can't utilize them to the extent that they used to, and I think because of fire laws, et cetera.
Mm.
But I think all these places have a tough time. I mean, I'm always happy for a club that, you know, that sticks around and keeps it going, because I'm sure it's very easy to just say, you know, hey, we're not making enough, and close the doors, you know. Comedy clubs, you know, they have, I'm sure they have their same problems too, but they usually pay a minimal amount to the comics, and most of the cover charges are then do go to the club.
Right. Going from sort of negative question to a more positive one, thinking back in your years of attending performances, is there one moment that stands out where you went to a club and you saw a particular performer or a group of performers and it was just a revelatory thing, like the greatest single moment you've ever had as a spectator in a cabaret situation?
Well, I probably had a lot of those. When I came in from Pittsburgh once on a vacation, I went to the Bitter End, and there was a group called the Big Three, which was Tim Harden and Cass Elliott before the Mamas and the Papas, and I forget the third person. And then also on the same bill was a group called Joan, Jake, and Jim, which was Joan Rivers, Jake Holmes, who's a wonderful songwriter, and Jim became a very, very big, very well-known comedy writer whose last name escapes me at the moment. But you know, you really saw something, you know, something really exciting. Or when I went down to see Reno Sweeney's, and caught Peter Allen for, you know, my first time of catching him was just a revelation. And in the later days of Reno Sweeney's, when the clubs were all fighting the cabaret laws where you weren't allowed to have more than three people on the stage, if you didn't have a cabaret license, which also meant you could have dancing, so what cabaret had that kind of a license, you know? But they were trying to enforce this. They closed down Mikkel's Jazz Club because of it. I mean, they closed down a lot of places and made a lot of trouble for for places. It was a kind of an archaic law that was on the books that is now off the books, but at that time they were still fighting. Marcia Malamet, who's a wonderful songwriter, was doing a show, and if a piano player sang and played the piano, it counted as two people.
Hmm.
And she had a backup singer. She had just written a song with Peter Allen, who was in the audience. So for us, it was a very exciting moment because Peter was in the audience. She kept screwing up the words, and he said, "Enough of this. You're not screwing up my song. I'm going to do it myself." And he came up onto the stage, and he went to the microphone, and he sang it, which, of course, the audience is going, "Oh, my God, this is fabulous. Peter Allen is doing his own song, brand new, you know, right hot off the presses." And the club owner is standing on the side going, "Please get him off the stage. There's more than three people now. I'll get a ticket." And, you know, it was always a kind of thing of you're fighting for different reasons. We wanted more of Peter Allen, and he just couldn't wait to get him off because he didn't want to get fined.
Well, just tell him to sing a cappella.
That's right.
You know, he could carry the maracas. He could do it, you know. And for those who are not familiar with that name, he is, of course, the character on whom The Boy from Oz is based, the big Broadway musical with Hugh Jackman playing Peter Allen. And, you know, just making sure that our listeners know some of the terrain that we've been covering here with Jamie DeRoy, who is, gosh, performer, producer, hostess, and guide. What would you call yourself? What term would you use? Well, producer,
two,
yeah.
Across the board. Yeah. I am a producer, and I've, you know, not only produced these things for TV and for live, you know, variety shows, but I've actually gotten involved with producing off-Broadway and as an associate producer on Broadway. I mean, it's something I would love to be able to do more of, but it's very tough. But I love putting, you know, people together, and I love having an audience discover new talent or revisiting, you know, some talent maybe that they are familiar with. I mean, we were quite lucky at the beginning of my run in 1990 when we started these shows. Steve Allen came to one of my shows. He'd been sending these parodies.
Yeah.
We were in touch by mail. Nobody had email though then those days, you know, by mail and fax. He'd go, "Oh, I just wrote this new parody. Maybe you can try it." And he would just send me a parody. I didn't even know him. I just had written to him, and he was the nicest person on earth. And he shows up to catch my show, and having sent me a new parody, I said, "I'd much rather you do it. You'll do it better. Why don't you come up on stage?" And he did.
All right.
And so those are the kind of things where I'd say, you know, we had help from, you know, maybe it wasn't planned, but it worked out that way, you know, from some people that were a great boost to when we started. And Laverne Baker, God rest her soul. I mean, she had come and done a couple of shows with me. She's so funny. And, you know, to get her to get up and sing Tweedledee Dee, but even just having her talk on stage was priceless. And Dolores Gray, as a matter of fact, Dolores Gray, Laverne Baker, and Mario Cantone were all on the same show, and I had them all on the stage at the same time talking. It was just priceless. It was so funny.
Do you have tapes or footage of any of
you
this?
You know, the one thing that I always did was I videotaped everything I ever did except one show at the ballroom that we thought, "Oh, it's the same cast. We don't really need it that night." But otherwise, I do have tape of everything from 1990. I mean, in my dreams, I kept thinking somebody from some major cable channel or a major station would come along and say, "We got to put her on the air." Well, nobody did. And after a few years, Bradshaw Smith, who did all my videotaping, said, "Put yourself on." I was already on Cabaret Beat with him, and he had decided to drop Cabaret Beat for Broadway Beat.
Right.
And he said, "You've got such great footage, and you keep doing this. Just do it on your own," and which is what I did. And I was very sorry to see Metro Arts 13 go under because they played some of the shows, and it got us a wider audience. And it was very sad to see a cable station, you know, under a bigger umbrella than we were, not be able to make it.
But at least you still have, like, the archival stuff. Are you ever going to release maybe not on prepackaged videos or something, but you're doing CDs of new material. Have you thought about also doing this as the years go by? It's going to get more and more valuable in just an aesthetic sense of putting out that material to the public.
I haven't thought about it. I would, you know, want to really double check, you know, how, you know, legally or morally right it is, you know.
Well, I mean, you still have to get the rights, I guess, from the performers that they were still alive. I mean, that yes, it's a headache, but
yeah.
But
we have this footage, I mean, from time to time we'll do a show, Gone But Not Forgotten, and we've have people that have not necessarily all died, although some of them have, but some groups just disband, like
right.
JQ and the Bandits. They were a great group. I wish they were still around. But for whatever the reasons, you know, it's hard to keep a vocal group together when there's a lot of people with a lot of different schedules and personal lives. And so, you know, they disbanded. And but then, you know, I have people on tape like Bruce Hopkins doing some of the funniest stuff I've ever seen. And, you know, and this is the kind of stuff we have to remember him by, or Nancy Lamott, because they are gone, or Laurie Beachman, you know. They're not going to be able to come back and do it, so at least we can remember them in a fond way.
And you are creating new memories for people by releasing, well, by having your TV show and by releasing compact discs. And I'm going to remind folks that the most recent one is called Animal Tracks. It's volume 5 of this project, which is a benefit for the Humane Society. It's Jamie DeRoy and friends, and her friends include such quite talented people as Judy Barnett, Emily Skinner, Paige Price, Carrie Butler. She was in Hairspray. Now she's in Little Shop on Broadway. Steve Ross was just marvelous. Marion Selby is kind of an odd person out there, and she does a spoken poem thing. And the wonderful Jay Rogers. Speaking of bartenders, I mean, he's a man who, while performing, is also bartending. I don't know if he still does it, but I remember seeing him in a show and then wandering into Don't Tell Mama, and there he was serving me a drink. It was really interesting.
Well, there's a lot of talented performers out there that, you know, that are, their day job is being a waiter, which is, you know, probably more lucrative and interesting than working in somebody's office.
True.
I mean, Jimmy Smigula, who's on it, was discovered by Rosie O'Donnell, and then he went on to be in a couple of Broadway shows. Right now he's touring with Phantom of the Opera. He has a beautiful voice, and that was just because she brought him up from the audience, and he sang a couple of lines a cappella, and he blew everybody away.
Man, that was one of those one-in-a-million things.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're in the right place at the right time with the right people, but of course you spent the past 20 years getting to be in the right place at the right time with the right people.
Exactly.
Anyway, speaking of someone who knows how to do all that and get the right people together and being in this right place at this right time, I want to thank you so much, Jamie DeRoy, for being.
Anytime. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Likewise, good luck with your show on the 24th and every last Tuesday of the month at Dylan's Supper Club in, where is it exactly?
It's West 54th between 7th and 8th, right across from Studio 54. And, but, you know, there's really nothing better than live, as we all know when we go to the theater. It's quite exciting to see something live in front of your eyes. And there's nothing that will ever equal that.
Well, thank you, Jamie, for being live in front of our ears, and thank you for giving us so many good times and so much good music. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you, David, and thanks for all that you do.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Hey,
it's about 25 to 8, and I want to take a few minutes to go off on something. Yes, this is the segment. I should start getting little opening numbers for segments like they have. You know, Dave goes off. Dave, I'm getting a horrible look already from my engineer. Engineer Joe, welcome back. He wasn't here last week, so it's great to see him again. But Dave Goes Off is a segment I do every now and again where I go off on a topic, off on a rant, off on a subject. Usually it's one particular beef that I want to go through, but today I'm being more whimsical, more kind of observational in my tone. I'm going to be talking hankies and mysteries and histories and all sorts of cool things. So without further ado, first thing I wanted to talk about is I had a Seinfeldian moment this past weekend, or a few days ago, and it involves a handkerchief. And it's not quite of the Othello level of intrigue here. But I had gone to see an off-Broadway show at the York Theater. Well, York Theater Company does their shows now at the City Corps Center up on Lexington and 54th. And I saw a very nice performance by Max Marath. Now, if you've heard that name, he's been doing ragtime shows, solo shows about the form of ragtime, playing a terrific piano, and giving the history of people like Jelly Roll Morton and people who ring doorbells at the stupid radio station. So, it was a good show. I mean, he's been literally about four decades now, and he's still doing it, and he's still very fun to see. So I'm coming out of the show with a bunch of people in the audience, and, you know, the median age of the audience at the York Theater, unfortunately, is Yahrzeit. I mean, I thought like five of them would keel over dead by the end of the show. Just not because the show is bad, but because of age. Anyway, so I'm walking out, you know, going towards the elevator, and talking also, I came with a friend there, and we were talking about stuff, and then I hear behind me that someone had dropped a handkerchief on the floor in the hallway and the entryway. Now, I carry a handkerchief. I know that's fairly unusual for people. I don't know why. I think they're very convenient and they're nice and they're soft and you don't have to carry tissues that fall apart and stuff. So my first instinct was, oh my gosh, I must have dropped my hanky. But I was already about, you know, 10 or 20 feet from where that was. And my first thing was, okay, I better go and grab my hanky. And then it occurred to me that it might not 100% necessarily be my handkerchief. And that kind of made me wonder, well, if I go back and get it and it's not mine, I'm going to be really, really sorry for picking that thing up. And if I do go and it is mine, well, what are people going to think that I'm going back to pick up a hanky that may or may not be mine? So these are the kinds of things that make doorbells go off in my head. And Joe, if that rings one more time, I'm going to go in there and unplug it myself. Anyway, so it was kind of this weird hanky moment, and I ultimately decided to leave it. I didn't do the Jason Alexander thing where I studied it and then grabbed it and then put it down and then picked it up and really made a terrible scene of it. I just let it be. Anyway, on to the next. I guess that story wasn't as interesting as I thought it would be. On to the next bit is also a theatrical thing, just some stuff that made me think a little bit, which I guess is what off-Broadway theater is all about. I saw a show called The Mysteries at Classic Stage Company downtown on East 13th Street, and it just closed, and it was an interesting production, and it was based on biblical cycles done in the 1400s and the 1300s of plays that brought the Bible to life, basically almost like kids doing biblical pageants in elementary school, except these were professional actors and real directors and designers making them come to life for real audiences. So the first half of the show was authentic texts in verse, translated, but still tried to keep very specifically to the style that these pieces would have had back in the 1300s and 1400s. And then the second half of the show was a bit more interesting, also because it was dealing with New Testament stories rather than the more familiar old ones. And there they acted out certain trials that Jesus Christ went through and then his followers and disciples, done by various modernist playwrights. Everyone from Dario Fo, I'm forgetting a couple of the others. And they weren't avant-garde or absurd or anything like that, but they were certainly more dramatic and different and interesting and also in a more common vernacular. Now, one of the things that I really wanted to just mention, and the thing that surprised me about the whole show, because certainly the first act, you know, it was Noah and Cain and Abel and Adam and Eve, and Noah I was disappointed with, because they had all this water being thrown on people in front of the stage, but no animals! How can you do a Noah's Ark story without animals? But they did also have the Isaac and Abraham story, you know, of course, everybody knows where Abraham gets a visitation from God, and God says, look, I know you love, your son is wonderful, and you have this great relationship, and because you do, I want you to go kill him. And, you know, Abraham has no choice. He's a devout follower. I don't think he's a Jew yet. There's no such thing, but he's a God Godite, as opposed to a Sodomite or Idolite. So as a Godite, he brings his only and beloved son that his wife had, I think, when she was 114, to a forest, and is just about to hack his head off, and then God says, just kidding, don't bother. And it's always been a very strange story in the Bible, and contextually, it has always been about God telling the Hebrews and the Israelites, no more human sacrifice, because it was a common thing, apparently, back then, for virgins and young children, and, you know, the families would, as a matter of course, sacrifice a member of the family for various reasons. And this was God saying, no more of that, you're different, you're going to sacrifice animals instead, leave your kids alone. Which is a lovely thing, but it really puts Abraham through a terrible psychological wringer, and his kid too. I don't remember what age he's supposed to be, but it's pretty horrible. Anyway, the one thing that this production of The Mysteries at CSC did was tie it in a very odd way to the New Testament. Now, I'm Jewish, I don't believe in the New Testament, and I'm not as familiar with it. But it made a very, very cool and interesting thing, because what happens at the end of the first act is God spares little Isaac, and Abraham's happy, and Isaac is happy, and God says, okay, you know, I did this for you, and I just want you to know the reason I did this is, in a couple of hundred years, or a thousand years, I'm going to have a son. And then he's going to come to Earth, and you are not going to be so kind and nice to him. And for the first time, it actually pulls it full cycle. If you just look at it, not religiously, but in an aesthetic way, it ties the Old Testament and the New Testament together, and then in the second half, you see, of course, you know, how Jesus is treated so badly and crucified, and interesting. It's an interesting psychological tie. Okay, just have about one or two more minutes of this segment. Wanted to do something a little more amusing and happy. I saw an ad in the Village Voice this past week, and it was for, not a joke, for the Jewish Referral Service. And no, this is not an advertisement for them, but I'll give you their phone number just so you can tell that I'm not kidding here. 888-261-2799. And the advertisement says, need a service? Don't take chances. A wrong decision can be hurtful. For all your needs, absolutely free, lawyers, doctors, accountants, real estate, electricians, computers, plumbing and heating, auto service, with over 14 years of experience, we will give you a right recommendation. What I'm trying to get at here is the Jewish Referral Service. I assume they want to refer Jews to Jews so that we use our own people. Kind of an odd thing, but I kind of understand the doctors and lawyers element of that. That goes back, you always kind of want a Jewish doctor, or at least in the old days we needed. Certainly a Jewish accountant. And real estate, okay, we're good at. And electricians, we've used Jewish electricians, they're perfectly fine. But when you get to plumbing and heating, I don't know, I just don't ever recall saying, oh my God, the toilet's leaking, find a Jew! We need to fix the toilet, we need a Jew now. So, hey, I think it's kind of cool. I guess it's part of this whole new reinvigoration of the concept of being Jewish that the Hebrew Hammer has done and this new Jewish hip thing that's going on. And I'll also be talking a little bit more about Jewishness in the next segment because we got a letter about last week's show that I want to read on the air. But anyway, thank you for letting me go off in this segment of Dave Gone By called Dave Goes Off. Want to hear your comments? Email them to me at davesgoneby@aol.com. Please, keep in touch. Let me know what you're thinking, because I'm letting you know what I'm thinking, and I'm thinking we will be right back right after this. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com. Almost time for me to bid you WGB bye, but I still have a couple of minutes on this President's Day. Time enough to thank a few people. First and foremost, the charming and personable Jamie DeRoy, a real asset to the cabaret scene and a pleasure to have on this program. Do go out and get the CD, Jamie DeRoy and Friends Doing Animal Tracks, with a whole host of cabaret talents singing songs devoted to our fine feathered and four-legged friends. And don't forget, the proceeds all go to the Humane Society. So that's Jamie DeRoy and Friends, J-A-M-I-E, DeRoy, small D-E, capital R, small O, small Y. Thanks to her, and thanks to Judy Katz for helping set that all up. And speaking of CDs, here is a reminder that you can hear previous episodes of this program now on compact disc. Really nice, with covers and pictures and track listings and everything. Just $14 a disc. Specify the event you want. I know we have every one from 2004, and we're slowly moving backwards into 2003. And one way to get a free disc of the show is if your greeting is selected for the program's opening. We're still accepting your wildest and wackiest, cleverest and slickest catchphrases for me to begin Dave's Gone By. So if you think you can do better, then boom, hose me down! Do it. Send your entries to davesgoneby@aol.com, davesgoneby@aol.com. Enter as many times as you please. It's not a random drawing. The winner, if there is one, will get a CD copy of the program on which I announce the victor's name and his or her conquering catchphrase. davesgoneby@aol.com. That's the address for all email to this program, letters, comments, inquiries about advertising or buying merchandise. There's also a snail mail address, Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557. Please do get in touch. Please do let me know what you think, positive and negative. It's the only way I can tell if people are digging what I'm doing or not, or what parts they are and what parts they aren't. Last week, as a perfect example, I got a gracious letter in the mail. That's right, an old-fashioned handwritten letter. And I guess the truism is true. People don't get in touch unless something bothers them. If everything's cool and status quo, folks are pretty passive. It's only if they feel ruffled or have a problem that they come out of their shells a little. I guess that's human nature. And certainly I couldn't have gotten a nicer, more courteous complaint letter than the one I received from Marvin Schlesinger of Freeport, New York. Marvin listened to our program last Monday, February 9th, the one with special guest Rabbi Saul Solomon. And, well, as I warned on the show, he's definitely our most controversial visitor. And I think every member of my immediate family hates him and wishes he'd never get back on the air. But, hey, that's my family. They're a little sensitive, a little old-world fearful, and they're not, as my sociologist wife might put it, a broad demographic sampling frame. But Marvin Schlesinger is neither a friend nor a relative. He's just a guy who listened to the show and felt strongly enough to write in. He writes, "Dear Dave, I usually enjoy the show and find it a welcome relief from boring talk shows." Ah, Mr. Schlesinger, flattery will get you everywhere. But, here comes the but. "But I found Monday's show in bad taste. I believe the rabbi was particularly offensive, since I am also Jewish. I believe a rabbi is a person to be respected and revered. You may disagree, but I didn't find it humorous. Otherwise, I think the show very entertaining and enjoyable. Very truly yours, M. Schlesinger." Well, Mr. Schlesinger, first of all, thanks so much for writing in, for stating your case and being so decorous and complimentary, even though you weren't happy with the sketch. I kind of like the rabbi. I think he's very lively and different and outspoken. He might cut down a little on the goddammits, but I don't think he means any harm. And if you look behind the diatribes and the blinding Hebraic rage, I think he makes some valid social and satirical points. So I might have a little heart-to-heart with the Rebbe and get him to tone down the rhetoric a shade, or possibly defrock him a notch, so that he speaks only for himself and not the entire congregation. I can say that as much as I love him as a guest, he only pops up a couple of times a year on this program, and we generally have ample warning when that's likely to occur. So if the rabbi really does bother you, you might want to turn the dial for that segment and not hold it against the rest of the show. But again, thank you, Marvin Schlesinger, for your honesty and civility. Would that all the other folks listening were as proactive That is a hint, folks, a reminder that all you have to do is put pen to paper and send it to Dave's Gone By, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557, or put fingers to keyboard and email davesgoneby@aol.com, reminding you also that Dave's Gone By is just one of the fine programs on this eclectic radio station. This is also the place to hear Long Island's Dating with Bonnie D. Graham, Advice for Singles, Friday nights at 6, and Thursday nights at 9, it's Comic Book Novice. From Marvel to Image to Acclaim, they're all discussed by devoted fans and experts, 9 p.m. every Thursday. And of course, Engineer Joe and his multitude of programs on this frequency, Your World with Joe Salzone, Sunday nights at 6, WGBB Tonight, Monday nights at 6, just before my show. Joe also has a late-night program Sunday and Monday nights at 11. And catch Your World on TV, Long Island Cablevision Channel 20, every Sunday afternoon at 1. Now, they've repeated the same episode 6 weeks running, and I don't know why, and I'm not complaining, because it's the episode where Joe interviews me. So if you've missed it, you may or may not have another chance to catch it. The only way to know is by tuning in this Sunday, 1 p.m., Long Island Cable, Channel 20. Maybe I'm there, maybe I'm not, but Joe Salzone will be, so grab that remote, Sunday afternoons at 1 for Your World on TV. And when it's done, get yourself some lunch at the Tandoor Grill, yummy Indian food in Rockville Center. See their menu at tandoorgrill.com, not tandoori, tandoor, leave off the last I for India-licious. And an India-loving thank you to my wife, Joyce, my one and only Valentine, and sending out best wishes to my cousin Karen and my close friend's mother-in-law. They both found out last week individually, or at least they revealed last week, that they have the same rather frightening and serious ailment. Not much to say about news like that, except here's hoping they beat the odds, and that they and their families and friends are strong enough to look horror in the face, rear back, and spit in its eye. In much happier family news, next week, February 23rd, is my dad's birthday. He turns 67 years old, and we're going to celebrate, as we have in the past, with his presence on the program. Last year, he talked about his meeting my mom and also having me, thank goodness, in that order. Lots of stories from my childhood. Next week, I'll be asking about his years in the Air Force and Reserves. As I recall, he has more than a few nutty and enjoyable tales to share from those post-Korean, pre-Vietnam years, so that's next week, February 23rd, plus we'll have the news gone by, and who knows what else. What you can count on is that we'll be here Monday night, 6:30 to 8 p.m., with a 66th episode of Days Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Hail to the chief. And gone by. Thank you.